It is September the 9th, 2011. I am Steve Growick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net. That's Growick.net. And tonight I'm welcoming to the website a former TNA, a former WWE or WWF, and a former ECW World Heavyweight Champion. Tonight I give you Justin Credible. How you doing tonight, Justin?
Great, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You got me very intrigued. I got a press release from you earlier this week talking about a comeback. So what does the comeback all entail?
Well, basically, I've been away from the business for a little bit, and, you know, I figured time is ticking. I'm 37 years old, and, you know, I've been sober 8 months now, you know, free from drugs, and I just figured, you know, it'd be the right time to give it one more shot at this business, something I'm very good at, something I'm still very passionate about, and something I still feel that I can contribute to. And, you know, I'm just ready to do the best I can and get back in the mainstream of things. And, you know, just can't wait to get back in there.
So I guess, you know, with the comeback, a lot of people ask, you know, what's your goal? Is it get back with Vince, go back to WWE? Do you want to get into TNA? You're looking to go to Japan? Where's kind of your ultimate goal for the comeback?
It's actually quite simpler than that. My goal is just basically to just become relevant again. It doesn't necessarily mean being with WWE or TNA. If you recall, I did a TNA pay-per-view last year, Hardcore Justice, the ECW reunion thing. So it's not necessarily my goal. I would be happy just I'm going to be happy just knowing that I went out my way as far as being able to be completely productive and putting out the best possible work that I can, whether it be on the indie scene, whether it be with a major organization, whether it be with Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, overseas, whatever it may be. You know, I'm open to any and all things, and you know, it's I'm just gonna see, you know, take it as it goes. I just want to basically let my work do the talking, and I think when people see what Justin Credible is doing as far as being, you know, as far as physical and match work, you know, quality, I think it'll speak for itself. So I'm just going out there looking to do the best that I can and to, you know, just show people that the old Justin Credible is back.
Awesome. So let's talk about, I understand you got an internet show that you're going to answer questions from the fans.
Yeah, we do it, right now we're doing it 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. Four of those days I do it by myself at home, just on, you know, my iPhone. Take questions, broadcast it live on www.justin.tv/PeterPolacco1. And one of those days I do it at my good friend Dean Wentworth's house. And basically, you know, we just go 1 hour and take all kinds of questions from the fans. And the one we do at his house, he has a mini studio set up. We post that on YouTube. So, you know, we're just looking to get out there and make our social media presence felt and really just get back in touch with the fans, you know, because I've kind of been away for a little bit. I've never been completely away, but, you know, compared to what people are doing today as far as connecting with fans, I feel like I have distanced myself. So I'm just, you know, doing a little bit to try to get back in there and show people, hey, I'm still here. And we're going to be doing some really cool things in the future. So that's basically what that's about, and just getting back in touch with the fans.
That's awesome. And yeah. I guess what's like the most common question you get from the fans at this point?
Most common question is, you know, they always ask me about the click, you know, stuff like that. You know, my ECW days, very common. You know, just mostly the click, though. I get so many silly answers, you know, questions about that. So, but, you know, it's all good. You know, just people being curious, I guess.
Now, you started off by saying that you've been clean or sober now for 8 months.
Yeah.
And that would mean that when you were in the TNA pay-per-view Hardcore Justice last year, you were not. So was that maybe part of the reason they didn't retain you after that pay-per-view?
I don't think so. I was in the process because I had gone to treatment thanks to Vince McMahon's wellness program. I was in and out of recovery. You know, I'm not saying, you know, I'm saying 8 months consecutive. You know, I was well, you know, I was trying to, you know what I mean? You have relapses. I'm saying I'm 8 months well now to this day. So I don't think that was an issue at all. When I showed up prepared. I showed up drug free. You know, did I have a relapse in between? Yes. I'm not saying it was an extended period of time, but no, you know, things do happen, and it's a very difficult, you know, thing. You know, it's not easy. It's not a cakewalk. You know, it's something that nothing can prepare you for. But no, that wasn't. a factor. I just don't think they were ready for, you know, I think that whole ECW thing was very ill-conceived. And obviously, just by the way things went, they, you know, we know where it ended up. So, but no, I don't feel that was an issue at all, because I went in there, like I said, I went in there trained, prepared, and at that point I was not using. But the 8 months that I mentioned, it was, you know, consecutive. So it's one of those things you brag about in recovery.
Yeah, I can tell you're very candid, and you're very open and honest about your problems there. And
yeah, absolutely.
That's like the ultimate to get past, you know, where you are, because if you don't accept where you are, then you can never get better from there.
Absolutely, I agree. And, you know, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger. And it's just a lesson in life, you know. When I started doing the things that I was doing, I was very innocent. I mean, I got into the business at 19 years old, you know, traveling with, you know, some of the most infamous people in the business, you know, never using drugs or alcohol before. Getting thrust into that whole spotlight was quite overwhelming. And whether I did things just to fit in at times, I know I did, you know, and before you know it, you get caught up, and it's just, you know, it turns into a cycle. So I'm just happy to be where I am today. I'm very fortunate and blessed. I have a great family and a great support system that, you know, brings me to where I am today, you know.
Let's start with, you know, with TNA, because that was your most recent outing. You did the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view, as we talked about. And, of course, this year they've decided to retain the name Hardcore Justice, but yet they obviously didn't use any of the ECW originals. What was your thoughts on the idea of the ECW reunion? And then did you think this could be something they could do on an annual basis, or did you think it was kind of be a or should be a one-time only type deal?
It depends. I mean, I honestly think it should have been a one-time thing for some people. I don't think that all of the guys are necessarily, you know, up for the challenge of being, you know, called upon all, you know, on a regular basis to perform at that level. You know, some guys are, you know, are in different situations mentally, physically than I am. You know, I'm still blessed. I started at a young age. You know, I started in 1992, like I said, at 19, puts me at 37 today. So I'm still not, you know, necessarily over the hill, especially in you know, pro wrestling standpoint.
Yeah, you're a young guy yet.
Yeah, yeah. Relatively, yeah. So
yeah. Uh-huh.
Just a young guy with a lot of experience, which I think gives me an advantage. And two, you know, I just think that, you know, going back to an ECW concept, it's going to be very difficult to replicate. I mean, to get the right guys that made it special, you know, fast forward 10 years, you know, not all of those guys are in the same condition or in the same mind frame, you know, to do it. Some of them aren't doing it at all, you know. So I just think their idea, you know, I'm glad that it was a one-off. But, you know, some of the guys that they used, you know, guys like Jerry Lynn, who originally was scheduled that never got to compete, is in TNA today. And, you know, I just wish, you know, just it'd be interesting. I just hope that they would, you know, maybe look to the future and see possibilities with other ECW talents, you know, because, you know, there's still a lot of good talent out there that's never really been utilized.
I think you make a good point. You know, if ECW is like nostalgia and you use it seldomly, it means something special. If you do it all the time, then it kind of loses the appeal.
Exactly. So,
like with anybody.
Like
yeah.
with anything, right. And,
yeah.
And I think, you know, it's an amazing thing, because it's always trying to be resurrected because it meant something. And that's quite flattering, because you don't see Vince McMahon doing a WCW reunion or anything like that. What we did in those, you know, for me, I was there 3 years. In those 3 years, you know, I talk about it with Tommy Dreamer and, you know, a lot of the other guys there. We revolutionized the business. If those 3 years were the only 3 years I ever had, then I'm, you know, I'll take it, because those 3 years, we changed the wrestling business forever. And it's something I'm quite proud of and I take quite seriously. And that'll always be something I hold very near and dear, because we gave everything we had, blood, sweat, tears, family, friends, money. It wasn't about that. It was about our contribution. And some of us today, I mean, a guy like Sabu, who's given his entire body, life to this business, you know, he's somebody that I would love to see get an opportunity. You know, and I think TNA personally dropped the ball on, because to this day, I think he is still an untapped resource who never became the superstar that he deserved to be. And, you know, I think one day it'll all fall into place when it's all said and done. But, you know, I'm just looking forward right now. I'm not, you know, nothing we could do about the past, just looking forward to the future. You know what I mean?
You make a great point, too. You're talking about, you know, they brought back ECW, obviously. WWE brought back ECW for the one-night stand pay-per-view, and then, of course, it became a ECW TV show on Sci-Fi, and
sure.
Obviously TNA has brought it back for the Hardcore Justice, and like you said, WCW has never been brought back in any form, and yet, so I guess that really shows the influence you guys really had on the business.
Yeah, it really does, because, I mean, what we did was so... just so different. We didn't have money. We didn't have, I mean, everything we did was, you know, out of pure desire to just make the business different and to just break barriers. And when you do that, there's a real integrity to what you're doing. We weren't necessarily in the beginning doing it for money. We were doing it for love of the business, to progress what was going on in the business, to change what was going on in the business. So, in my opinion, you know, there is nothing purer than that when money is not involved, when anything isn't involved like that in the beginning. And, you know, to me, it was just a real natural, real wonderful thing to be a part of, and something that all of us that have been there, you can ask anybody that was a part of ECW during that time period, it's something that none of us can ever deny or none of us will ever forget.
Yeah, we'll have some more questions about ECW, but let's say quickly with the TNA. Of course, you've had a couple of stints there with TNA, and TNA's been in business for about 9 years, going on a decade now. And, you know, the name of their show is Impact. They call it Impact Wrestling. But, you know, some would argue they have not really made an impact in the business. You know, their business numbers are pretty much consistent with ratings numbers are always in the same range. They draw about the same number of house shows. What do you think TNA really needs to do to really connect with the everyday wrestling fan?
I think the bottom line is this. This is always and traditionally always will be a young man's business. It was when I was coming up and when I got my big break in ECW. And it is so, and it stays true to this day. The power is with the youth. Business and what's hot always changes. And even though I'm 37, I realize that. You know, I'm not just trying to hold on. You must progress. And I always, you know, I think right now, unfortunately with TNA, they have, you know, guys, and no disrespect to them, I'm not trying to not get heat or anything like that, but, you know, you've got so many older talents ruling the airwaves. You know, the Hulks, the Flairs, the Stings, the Jarretts, the Scott Steiners, just to name a few. And not that they have a very, you know, they have a place in the business. They certainly do. They bring great name value to the business. But when you start focusing everything you have on those particular entertainers, you know, you're really missing out on the young crop of talent that could really rock the business, you know. And, you know, that's – I was given my opportunity with Paul at 24. You know, if you don't give it to him then, that means you're going to miss over a whole generation of guys. What, are you going to wait till they're 34 before you give them a break? You know, I mean, I remember – Undertaker, when I was Aldo Montoya, talking to me in 1997, saying, you know what, Pete, I think I'm going to, you know, hang it up soon, you know, and this is 97, and I have every respect for Taker in the world. This is not a diss or anything like that, but Mark's still doing it to this day, you know, so in my opinion, I was like, well, you know, when that generation goes, I'll have my shot. That generation's still not gone. So do you know what I mean? You got generations that are skipping gaps that aren't getting their opportunity. So I just think that they need to put their focus on younger talent, spend the money and their production value. And they have good production. They produce great videos and promos and stuff like that. Just put your money with the younger talent and give them a shot, and you'll be amazed what will happen. You have to gamble a little bit. You're going to make some mistakes. But, you know, I think essentially that's the core. You know, the core of what's going to be fresh and new. How are you going to know what's the next big thing if you don't give the next thing the opportunity? You know, so like I said, the older guys have a place. I'm hoping, for, you know, I'm 37. I'm hoping for a place somewhere. But, you know, I'm not saying I deserve top billing. You know, we all have places in this business. This business has legends, people that should be on television, but to contribute, not to rule the show. You know, TNA unfortunately seems like a bad rerun of 2000 Nitro. You know, and that Nitro got the company out of business.
Yeah, sometimes
why are you trying to replay it in 2011?
Yeah, you got a lot of the same characters that were there. Eric Bischoff is still there.
And those people just they're good at one thing, unfortunately, and that's bankrupting companies. And it's not a diss; it's just fact. And you know, everybody needs to take a step back and just really take the time to analyze what's going on and to hopefully make a better decision. I mean, they got enough talent. It's not a lack of talent. They got so many great young talents out there. You know, you just got to give them an opportunity. That's all they're looking for.
What's your thoughts on the TNA power structure with, Dixie Carter being the president and obviously Vince Russo, kind of a heat magnet as the head booker? What's your thoughts on the power structure?
Dixie's a wonderful lady. Last time I was there for Hardcore Justice, I sat with her the night before in a private setting. I was actually with her and her husband the night before at a restaurant, at a meet and greet, and we had some private time, and we spoke. And she's a wonderful person, loves the business, very passionate about our business, and is trying to do the right things, by the business. She does respect what we do, and I give her a lot of credit. Unfortunately, I think there's just a lot of people in her head trying to manipulate her decisions, and these people I think are very cunning and kind of know what they're doing. And Vince Russo, never worked with him. I knew him in the old WWF. He was just a writer for the magazine. He used to do the Vic Venom columns in WWF magazine. So, that's what I never worked with Vince as a booker, but obviously the proof is in the pudding. And unfortunately he hasn't been able to produce in over 12 years. So I think, with that kind of track record, CEO wouldn't want to be.
I think you'd be excellent to answer this question. Obviously, you worked for Paul Heyman, and there was rumors about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, that Paul Heyman could possibly be hired for TNA and to try to rejuvenate the company. Do you think Paul Heyman could really make a difference with TNA?
Paul could make a difference, but unfortunately, Paul can't work. He doesn't work well with others. It's a famous T-shirt that I used to wear in ECW. It said, "Doesn't work well with others," and he doesn't. It's Paul's way or the highway, and not everything Paul does is sane. Paul's a nut. He's a mad genius, and unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't translate well into a corporate structure. And for Paul Heyman to succeed, and he knows this, he would have to have full control and be able to make decisions on his own without a committee or people saying, "Oh, I don't believe this," or Hulk Hogan saying, "Oh, I don't like this," or Bischoff saying, "I don't like that." Again, I'm not knocking those guys, but I know Paul, and Paul does what Paul does, and he needs, he would need full control and nobody else in his ear. And that's why I don't think Paul Heyman will ever, get into the wrestling business again, to be honest.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think that was probably the last chance. I think that could have been his chance to come back. I think he laid out a plan. I guess he met with Spike TV officials and, for whatever reason, they did not come to an agreement. I think a lot of it is, I think he kind of wanted to clear house to a larger degree. Like you said, he doesn't work well with some people, and he probably came in and said, "Okay, I'll come in, but you got to get rid of this guy and this guy and this guy," and they probably balked at it because
they have
a lot of money invested in some of the other players in the company.
I mean, I understand that point of view too, but Paul is, Paul's not, he doesn't apologize for his moves. He's very brash and abrupt, and he speaks his mind, and that's what made Paul Heyman Paul Heyman. And I just don't think they're ready for somebody like that, unfortunately. But unfortunately, I think that's what it's going to take.
What's your current relationship like with Paul Heyman?
I have not spoken to Paul, unfortunately, since 2006, when we were all both in WWE together. So, not that there's no animosity or anything like that, but no, I haven't spoken to Paul since 2006. So,
obviously, there was a lot of bounce checks at the end of ECW. A lot of people were in a lot of trouble with car payments and house payments. Did you kind of fall in the same boat where a lot of people just devastated, financially because the company went bankrupt right before their eyes?
I was actually, during that period, I was actually very lucky. Paul was very good to me in that aspect. the checks that had bounced for me to me were made up and made good. I was good. I was making a good salary at the time. I actually made more in ECW than I did, believe it or not, in my Aldo Montoya days.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, so I was making good money, and Paul made good on 95% of it. So I didn't have that problem. And when ECW's doors did close, I was very lucky to sign a lucrative deal with WWE to do the X Factor gig. So it was. I didn't get into financial problems until about 2004, 2005, unfortunately. And then I was re-signed in 2006. So, you know, I've dodged a couple of bullets, but you know, there were definitely hardships. But I'm, you know, luckily not at the time you're talking about.
When did you know ECW was truly at the end of its run?
Oh, I absolutely knew in December of 2000, going into the last two pay-per-views. You know, we just all knew. We all knew. I started chopping around. I had an agent who was actually in the music business trying to shop my services to Jim Ross. He was affiliated with Kid Rock. He was working for me at the time, and he had contacted Jim Ross. So I was one of the guys that, got out in time, thank God.
Why did ECW ultimately fail? Was it, partly because they went on to, they went on with they got the contract for TNN, and obviously it was more of a watered-down version of the company. Or do you think maybe it was just too big? It got too big for...
Well, no, I think the whole thing was the competitive nature of the whole business. Paul was trying to keep talent. And, you have guys like Rob Van Dam, Sabu, myself, making top dollar, six-figure payoffs, yearly six-figure. So we won't go and jump ship. And there was more than, there was me, Dreamer, Sabu, Van Dam, Sandman at the time. We were making well into, good money, put it that way. I don't like to talk money, but we were making good money, six-figure money.
Mm-hmm.
And for Paul to do that with running a small, limited company the way he did, it was hard for him. So he was robbing Peter to pay Paul, sort of a thing. Trying to keep talent from jumping ship, as the Dudleys and Taz did, and a couple of others, Lance, Storm as well. So, I think he overextended himself in trying to keep talent, which ultimately I think bankrupted him in the end, and he kept it going as long as he could. But I think that was just the nature of the beast. He was trying to keep, He was trying to keep up with paying everybody to stay there. And ultimately, it was his demise.
Did you get offers at the same time? You talk about the Dudleys and the Sandman.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Hall and Nash were in WCW at the time, and I'm friends with Scott. He's one of my closest friends. And, I have opportunities to jump during the height of the NWO and didn't because, I'd rather make less money and be where I was in ECW than make big money. And, Lord knows what would have happened in WCW, so... it was the decision that, I'm quite comfortable and happy I made, actually.
What's your thoughts on when Vince brought back ECW for the sci-fi show?
At first, I thought it was wonderful. The first one-night stand that he put out was amazing. As good an ECW-style show as ever. Felt authentic. Everything about it felt authentic. I was there live. I was part of the show on several segments, and everything felt, Paul ran the whole thing. Minimum input, as far as I could see, from WWE brass, so it was very authentic. The second one in 2006, not so much. And when the show went on the air, it was what it was, and, hence the story of, the ill-fated, ECW, Vince's ECW.
We're going to incorporate some questions from Twitter as well as we go along here, but it was a question about the name Just Incredible. Who owns the name Just Incredible?
Right now, I'm not sure.
Okay, so are you allowed to use it on the indie circuit?
Yes, I do regardless. The whole thing was, the recent person that had owned the name was just a Mark promoter that bought it out of spite, so I wouldn't use it in TNA. And, he's not somebody that has any kind of you know, he doesn't have any ways to, you know, go to court and hold me against it. So I'm sure when his copyright runs out, as soon as you know, probably this year, that it'll be picked up by me. Vince doesn't own it, so no, I do use it, and I make no qualms about it. And you know, quite frankly, I don't care. I challenge him. Can't sue somebody that doesn't have anything.
Do you get a chance to watch the current WWE, Raw, SmackDown, and also TNA? And what's your thoughts on the current products?
I don't watch TNA, unfortunately. I can't. It pisses me off.
I was going to say, fortunately for you, I would say.
Yeah. WWE, I catch Raw. I do catch Raw, I'm not going to lie. SmackDown, I don't do as much. You know, unfortunately, I like the stuff they were doing with Punk. It was, you know, the way that the business, or the product, I should say, the WWE product, especially on Raw, has been so timid that Punk coming out and making the comments and shoot-style interviews that he's been putting out have been somewhat entertaining, you know, and quite, you know, to these days, it's like, whoa, wow, you know, I can't believe he said that. I mean, of course, everything's, you know, scripted and, you know, everybody in the office knows where he's going with it. That being said, it's still something that fans haven't seen in quite a while. So it's gotten good reviews. You know, I think they're dropping the ball on it right now. But, you know, again, I still think they need to elevate a lot of young talent. WWE has, you know, they're the dominant force in this world in sports entertainment, wrestling. You know, everybody's afraid to call it pro wrestling. I'm not. But and they just don't seem to want to give their younger guys a shot. You know, there's been few and far between. So I think when they start doing that themselves, they, you know, they'll find themselves in a better situation.
Yeah, I have no qualms. It's pro wrestling. I've covered it since 1997,
yeah.
So no problems there. In fact, I'd rather call it pro wrestling than sports entertainment. Although, I mean, obviously it is sports entertainment, but you know,
yeah.
I grew up watching wrestling. It was pro wrestling, and it's still pro wrestling as far as I'm concerned. So. Who is your current favorite wrestler in wrestling today?
That's a good question. You know, this is going to sound really sad, but I really don't even have one.
Okay.
I mean, I'm someone that loves this business. I truly love the business. And I'm not afraid to say, you know, oh, I'm a mark for this guy or that guy. Maybe it's me, you know, but I don't have that thing that I used to have for the performers of yesterday. You know, I used to look at guys like Flair, even Shawn, and guys like that, Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. And I, you know, even when I was in the business, say, wow, those guys are special. Unfortunately, with this crop of talent, there's not somebody that I see like, you know, wow, you know, look at this guy. I mean, I guess if anybody, I mean, I really like Randy Orton stuff. You know, only, I mean,
yeah.
I'm partly biased because when Randy was coming up out of OVW in 2002, I was working with him a lot on house shows before he ever made his debut. So I really have a personal connection to Randy. So I might be a little biased, but there's really not that wow factor for me. You know, I don't know if it's my age and I just don't, you know, I'm not as much of a mark as I used to be for those guys, but I'd say, you know, I would say him on top of anybody else.
No, I think you sum it up best. I think that's the frustration of fans today.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not that wow. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe, like I said, I don't know if it's because of my age, but I look at guys like Flair, Shawn, Kurt, guys that came from the old school. There's just a different respect for those guys. You know, I don't know what it is. You know, maybe it's because I know better. I don't know. I don't know how to differentiate it. But it's just, you know, I try to watch wrestling objectively and, you know, not take it personal. And, you know, on the show, that I don't find too much to say, that was, you know, amazing.
I think, yeah, you know, part of it is when you guys were doing it, you guys were weekly and Raw was a weekly show. There was no SmackDown at that time. It was special, like when Nitro was NWO, week to week, you couldn't wait to see the next episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now you have Raw and SmackDown, and you have pay-per-views like, you know, every 4 or 5 weeks, and there's nothing special about, I mean, they're constantly forced down your neck.
Especially with pay-per-views, it just
yeah.
feels like you're done with one, and you got 3 weeks to rush to the next one.
Right.
And,
yeah.
and, you know, why pay for the pay-per-view when you're getting the same matches, quite frankly, free on television? know?
Yeah, I mean, John Cena has been force-fed to us. I mean, I like John Cena.
I do too. People
but
would be surprised, yeah.
So stale of a character. It's
I think I've known John Cena since he was 16 years old, before he got into the business. When I was in ECW, we used to all stay, the guys that couldn't afford to get rooms at the time, we used to stay at his old man's house, John Cena Sr. And I met John when he was 16. I slept on his couch, you know. And, you know, I love the kid. I think he's an amazing talent. He's great at what he does, you know, and he works his ass off. But I just don't think, you know, it's just not, to me, it's not compelling.
No.
You know, and it's very predictable stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean,
I'm not a hater. It is what it is.
I mean, last year they had that Nexus angle. I thought that was going to be a huge angle, and they just kind of dropped the ball with it.
Yeah, totally.
You know? Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of the frustrations of the everyday wrestling fan. And as a journalist, too, has been covering as long as I have. Yeah, you know, like I said, I started really covering you guys in 97 when ECW was really hot and WCW was really hot and the WWF was real hot with, you know, Vince and Austin and The Rock and DX. And it's just not the same anymore. And, and obviously a lot of it is, as you were talking about before, the competitive. TNA is really no competition to WWE. And if TNA was competition to WWE, maybe they would turn it up a little bit.
Right
now,
exactly. And it's a shame,
you know,
that it's not. I wish they were. Yeah. You know, I don't hate anything. I wish that they would step up their game. You know, competition is a good thing, you know, and it just brings the best out of the other guy. So
I probably should ask you this up front. You know, you were talking that you're 37, you've been in the business since 92. How are you doing physically overall?
I tell you what, man, I'm the luckiest SOB in the face of the planet. I've never had a broken bone ever in my life. I've never had a surgery. I'm physically, I'm very lucky. I'm physically in as good a shape. I should take that back. I'm not in good, like the best shape that I've ever been in as far as cardio and conditioning. I'm working on that. But as far as injuries, I'm as good as I've ever been. I'm well rested. I'm healed. And, you know, I'm ready to take the next step in my career. Hopefully it's the final step.
Let's go back always to the beginning. Somebody wanted to know, what was it like training with the Harts in the early 90s?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, it was just to be part of that whole dynasty and be around such knowledge, you know. And that's why I really credit most of my success to, you know, is having such a good grasp on fundamentals of the business, that I was able to have the longevity and the success that I've had. You know, so many guys get involved and don't know the basics of what it takes to survive in this business. And unfortunately, that's the first thing I learned. You know, nowadays guys get thrust into situations that they're not prepared for. You know, and I was just very lucky. I was in the right place at the right time. And, you know, I attribute that to the training that I got.
Did you get stretched a few times by Stu?
No, that was past my time, to be honest. I wish I could say I did. You know, just for the folklore of it. But no,
sure.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't.
You know, you were talking, going back a little bit, you were talking about the NWO, and you were offered a deal to go to WCW, and you said you had no regrets. Do you have any regrets with wrestling overall?
Of course I do. You know, of course I do. I think in the 2002-2003 time, I was hanging out with, Jeff Hardy was a good friend of mine. Back in those days, we were traveling together to shows, and I got caught up in a little bit too much of the wrong thing. And I'm not going to go any further into that one, but I'm sure you guys can imagine. And I really, from that period on till, you know, I'd say about a year ago, I really, was in and out of being who I am, you know, kind of lost, depressed about opportunities in the business, seeing, you know, my career, my life, everything kind of dwindled-ish. And, you know, it was not good. So, that's always a big regret, because I think if I had kept my head on straight, I could have probably, I know enough people and I'm friends with enough people to have probably had jobs for as long as I wanted. So I'd be in a little bit of a different situation today, you know.
That was going to be my next question. Do you feel like you've burnt bridges?
No. I always, actually the last time WWE was in town here in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun for SmackDown, I'm always there backstage. Welcome, John Laurinaitis, Hunter. I always, you know, I'm good with that. I haven't burned bridges, but you get a stigma. You know, you get a certain perception of your past wrongdoings. So you're almost, you know, always having to prove yourself, you know, and that you're a changed individual, and that's not easy. So that's kind of what this is about today, is getting back on that horse and showing people that, you know, the old me is back, and this is what it's about today, not 5 years ago, you know.
You know, if WWE were to call you tomorrow and, you know, they would offer you a job, what would kind of be your dream job? Would you want to go back an active wrestler? Would you want to be a booker, a trainer?
I would always take any kind of offer, but I wouldn't want to be – I mean, I would take a job as a trainer, but I don't necessarily feel that's where my heart is. I still, you know, at the age I'm at, I still feel that I'm not – you know, and feeling the way I feel physically, I still feel that I have a lot of miles left as an entertainer. You know, maybe, you know, I don't think I'm being foolish because, you know, like I said, when does 37 in wrestling come over the hill? You know, not being injured and having a fresh body, I think I have a lot to offer. And it's just how to get it done. So, but I mean, of course, I would entertain any and all possibilities.
You know, you've had a couple stints with Vince. I guess, what was it like ultimately working for Vince McMahon?
A pressure cooker. You know, you walk into TV, it's like you're walking on eggshells. You don't want to piss anybody off. You don't want to say anything, you know, the wrong thing to the wrong guy. Just very stressful, you know, very, very stressful. So that's the best way I could sum it up.
With ECW, we got a lot of questions about, you know, your former relationships. People want to know if you're still friends with Lance Storm, Dawn Marie, Jason, and Nicole Bass.
I haven't spoken to Nicole Bass probably since we last worked together, but the other ones, Jason lives in 20 minutes away from me. I've talked to him up until 6-7 months ago. Dawn as well, and Lance is always going to be a friend of mine. Him and I have a unbreakable bond, and he's a wonderful human being and an even better performer. So, you know, Lance and I are tight till the end.
Yeah, that's kind of the part of the reason I was asking about trainer, because obviously, you know, Lance has a school up in Calgary. So you never had any thoughts of maybe open up a Just Incredible school?
You know, it's different in Calgary because of the whole lore, the history, the whole thing with Calgary. It's, you know, that's what made me want to go there, even though, you know, I went there under the Hart banner. Quite frankly, I was trained by Lance Storm because he was a year out of the Hart camp, you know. So, you know, Calgary is a little special as far as a place to go to be trained. I've thought about it, certainly, but the economic, you know, the way things are in the economy and the area that I live in Connecticut, it's just not as, you know, we've tried to do a school before and, you know, we rent buildings and have the space and kids just don't show up. And if they do show up, they show up and they, you know, they put down a deposit of a couple $100 and then they can't pay for the rest. So you end up going bankrupt. So on the school thing, it's just financially, it's just not viable right now.
Yeah. John from Twitter wants to know, what was it like being in the X Factor with X-Pac and Albert?
Oh, it was awesome, dude. I loved working with Pac. I mean, I've known Sean for my whole career. We started off, you know, in WWE at the same time. When 1-2-3 Kid came in, I was there as PJ Walker. Then I became Aldo, you know, and we were there the whole time, and we've been friends for well over a decade. So, I mean, he's amazing. We had a good run, and I wish that it would have, you know, I thought it could have been a lot better, believe it. You know, they didn't do all that much with X Factor, but I think that had to do a little bit with Kid's political stuff going on with Vince, who, you know, a lot more to it than met the eye.
And thoughts, Albert, of course, is in New Japan as Giant,
yeah,
Bernard.
Doing real well. Yeah, he's
yeah.
doing real well.
Have you talked to him in any recent times?
I saw him at an indie show about a year ago in Massachusetts, and he's happy, he's healthy, and, you know, awesome guy, one of the nicest guys in the world you'll ever want to meet, and very talented. Very, very talented.
I tell you, you know, I'm a huge fan of tag teams, and of course, Impact Players were my all-time favorite tag teams. Where do you think Impact players kind of stack up in the history of tag team wrestling?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know, because we were only a team for probably
a year and a half. Yeah, too short.
Yeah, way too short. And the only reason it broke up was because Lance went to WCW. You know, but I don't know. You know, I'd like to think we were a great tag team, but you know, there's so many greats out there. I mean, real legitimate greats. I don't want to sound cocky and rate us, but I'd like to think that, you know, for a minute we made our mark, and I thought we were at the time when we were there, we were as good as anybody.
I would agree with that, and the tag teams they had in ECW at that time were just awesome.
Oh yeah, they were. They totally were.
Do you have a favorite title reign?
Obviously my world title. I mean, you know, when I started off in this business in 92 doing jobs for Vince, you know, as PJ Walker, I would have never thought I would be a world champion. And I was the world heavyweight champion in ECW, third biggest wrestling company in the world. I was world champion for 6 months, and it was a proud moment for me because, you know, that's your dream. You know, and I took it very seriously. I worked as hard at a house show in front of 250 people as I did on pay-per-view in front of hundreds of thousands or whatever, you know, the buy rates were, you know, not to overblow it, but I worked as hard in front of nobody as I did in front of a lot of people because of pride and because of what it meant to me. And that's something I'll never forget and I hold very near and dear.
What was your favorite theme song or favorite entrance theme?
I like the old Just Incredible one. Snap your finger, snap your neck.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Just, you know, Paul brought that. You know, it was his idea, and it just kind of fit. You know, Paul was good like that. He was amazing like that.
You know, of course, I also did like the X Factor theme. That was
I liked it too. You know, the reason being that the guy that wrote it, Uncle Cracker, his brother Mike was my agent at the time. And I had a very close relationship with Kid Rock and his camp. So that's how we actually got to doing it, was because we were all friends sitting there in a bar one night. And, you know, we're like, hey, Cracker, you know, do you mind doing a song for us? And then we pitched it to WWE, and that's how it happened.
I tell you what, to me, that's another thing missing. You know, we talked about tag teams kind of gone from wrestling, managers kind of gone from wrestling, but the theme songs that when you first hear it, you just know who it is. I think that's really missing from today's wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, music and wrestling is as important as anything.
Yeah.
And it sounds foolish, but that's what Paul, you know, in the beginning, Paul had that music that, you know, he would take music from, you know, from contemporary artists and use it during the shows and for wrestlers, and that just brings, you know, it just draws fans in, and it makes you contemporary and makes you cool, and just that whole relationship with the music is absolutely undeniable. And I think, you know, if they would just spend a little bit of money in that department and pay for some of the rights to use some of today's, you know, hits, I think it would be a lot different than it is.
They just did that with CM Punk, you know.
Yeah,
they brought back,
it makes a total difference.
Cult of personality now. So
it's a big difference. It's a big difference.
Sure. Do you see any similarities with Ring of Honor to ECW as kind of a smaller promotion now trying to go nationwide on television?
I do, and I don't, because they've had so much time in a way to, you know what I'm saying, to get their message out there, and I think that they somehow failed to do it. You know, I don't know if they just failed to brand themselves as a certain thing. ECW had a very distinct brand of action, and I think ROH is still kind of searching for that, and especially now. I think they're, you know, since they're under new ownership and all that, it's going to be another journey for them, and I wish them nothing but the best. But I don't see the success, at least right now, that ECW had. No, but they certainly in the beginning had the opportunity to.
Thoughts on the Wrestling Society X project?
Just bad from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I'm friends with the producer who put the show on the air, Kevin Kleinrock, who worked with XPW out in California. He has good intentions. He owns Big Vision Entertainment, which puts out a lot of wrestling DVDs and stuff. But what he lacked was, I think, true wrestling, you know, leadership. He didn't have anybody working for him that had been in the business at all. You know, he was trying to do it on himself, all by himself from a television standpoint, from producing television. And, you know, wrestling is a different animal than any other television production. And I think you need legitimate wrestling people involved. And I think that's where it really hit the skids, you know.
Yeah, question from Twitter. Have you ever thought about writing a book?
Yeah, I really have. And if anybody ever jumps at the opportunity, I would be more than happy to, because I've joked about this with X-Pac before. It's especially in WWE, we joke about it mafia style. It's like, I know where the bodies are buried. You know? And yeah, it would be a great read, and I would love to someday.
Yeah, I think the road stories are just...
Well,
I've heard some of those road stories, so, you know, I think that's the thing that, you know, we saw the wrestling, we saw the TV shows, we saw the pay-per-views, but the things we didn't see is what happened, you know, backstage and on the road and behind the scenes kind of things that really, that's what people kind of want to gravitate towards because they haven't seen it or read about it yet.
And
so.
I tell you what, I mean, I have so much on, I mean, and it, I mean, I would never say unless it would be on something like a book, but I mean, I can go from top to bottom, from Steve Austin to Arn Anderson to Vince McMahon to Stephanie McMahon. And it's just, you know, someday, hopefully, if I get a book deal, it'll all come out.
So any book publishers out there, you know.
Yeah, please. I'm dying to do a book.
Thoughts on the Internet and the influence of the Internet on pro wrestling?
I think it's been confusing. At first, I think it's certainly had to make everybody adjust to the way they do business. But that being said, it's a positive thing. You know, anytime you can get the information you can get, just makes everybody else step their game up, and you know, it just pushes everybody to work harder. You know, as far as storylines, as far as making things make sense, as far as just typical, you know, just easy stuff. So I really think that, you know, it's been a positive, although scary at times, especially in the beginning, positive.
You know, with you, you know, years ago, there was the internet that you were working at Olive Garden, and they were kind of getting into your, you know, it's like they're getting into your personal, I think Shane Douglas was working at a Target.
Yeah.
So they were putting that on the internet. So how did you feel like they're putting like your...
Well, I mean,
your personal information out there, you know?
Well, I mean, that's part of the demon, right? But that's part of also what's destructive about it, about the business in some ways. I mean, I left WWE in 2006, the ECW version of WWE, and I went to culinary school. I took the money I made and went to culinary school, and it's something I was passionate about at the time, and I still am to this day. You know, and it's something that, look, I'm a family man. I'm married with three children. I got to make a living. You know,
sure.
unless there are fans out there that are willing to put money into my bank account, you got to do what you got to do.
That's right.
And I don't see that. I see that as heroic. I see that as honest. I see that as a man stepping up, not some scumbag trying to live off of, you know, mark promoters, you know, trying to get a free ride. So, you know, the responses I got were, oh, you're, you know, breadsticks, this and that, to Olive Garden. But it's like, you know what, you know, how are you going to support? You're going to support my family? Give me $100.
Sure.
Or, you know what I mean? It's like, nobody has to pay my bills but me. And it's hurtful because of what we do for the business and what we've done for the business to have that stuff. It, you know, it's shady in a way. But it is what it is, and, you know, you'll always have people doing that, so... You know, nothing you can do.
Had to be humbling, and obviously...
Oh, very humbling, but we're human beings. I mean,
sure.
We're not Britney Spears. We're
right.
Not, you know, major artists.
Thank God.
Thank God. I wish I had her money. You know, we're not... unfortunately,
yeah.
Wrestling doesn't produce those kinds of numbers. You know, I had a couple of years where I made $250,000 a year, but that doesn't last forever.
No.
You know, and you know, you have to make do, and you know, and that's the whole thing is people are unrealistic about this business, and they don't realize the facts of this business, that indie promoters, will, you know, aren't willing to pay you what you're worth, and that you got to hustle for every dime you get. So it's not, you know, that movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke is more real than I'd like it to be, you know. And then too many greats in this business, and I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about real greats that are living that struggle every day. So, you know, they should think about that when they're, you know, cheering one moment and then talking and making fun of the next, you know, because we're the ones killing ourselves for their entertainment.
So when you were working, one more question about Olive Garden, when you were working there, were you very well recognized?
Not necessarily, no. I've lived in the town that I live in all my life, so it's really not a big deal, you know. But like I said, you know, you're getting a little older. You have to move on, you know. And if the business isn't providing it, you got to do something. You know, I would assume take a job at McDonald's if I had to.
Sure.
Somebody's got to feed my family, you know, and it's a very personal thing to me. And people just don't realize it. And if fans have a problem with it, I'll give them my bank account number, routing number. Send me a couple hundred dollars, and then we won't have a problem. I won't have to work at Olive Garden. You know?
You were talking about, obviously, you said you have three children. Are they interested in wrestling? Is it something that somewhere down the line they could be in wrestling?
No, not at all. I have an 11-year-old who's wonderful, and he plays football, baseball, and does amateur wrestling. But no, he could care less. The daddy's just incredible. He was more happy with meeting Jeff Hardy at a meet and greet. He doesn't care what daddy's done. I could show him all the old footage he wants. It's not going to change his opinion.
When you're out and about, kind of in public, are you recognized as the wrestler?
Yeah, I still am. You know, still am. Yeah, quite a bit actually.
And you were talking about a culinary school. What's your best dish?
Mean chicken marsala.
That sounds good.
I challenge anybody to that, and quite frankly, I'm starving right now, so I'm going to go eat the minute I get off the phone.
And if somebody wanted to know why you never made it to AAW Pro Wrestling, I believe that's in Chicago.
Chicago, because they never called me.
There you go. With this comeback, you know, if they're out there listening.
Yeah, exactly.
Bush, book Just Incredible.
That's it.
Are you a fan of mixed martial arts?
You know what? I'm going to sound like a real dork, but I'm not. Okay. I don't know why. It's not. I have nothing against it. I think it's cool and all, but I'm just not drawn to it. You know, I've always been drawn to the larger than life kind of, you know, movies, fiction. You know, big into Star Wars. You know, I grew up in that stuff. So mixed martial arts is way too real for me. I can't imagine getting hit all those times.
What is Justin Credible like away from the ring?
This is it, man. This whole conversation. This is me. Very mellow, very cool, love music. You know, if I wasn't a wrestler, I'd probably be a musician. You know.
Are you a gamer at all?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I know, it's good. Kind of disappointing to some people because I know.
Well, I mean, there's probably video games with you on it, so.
Yeah,
you know.
I never play any video games, especially with me, because I can never win.
And your kids will probably beat you anyways, right?
Oh, of course. Are you kidding me?
We're closing out with Justin Credible, and before we wrap up, why don't you go ahead and plug your TV show, your internet site, and how people can get a hold of you on the social media.
All right, I got a ton of them, so you got to hold your breath.
Okay.
My internet show that we do it every day on weekdays, 7 p.m. Eastern. It's Justin Credible's Hardcore House Show, 7 p.m. at www.justin.tv/PeterPolacco1. That's for the show. On Twitter, it's just simple, at PJ Polacco. Please follow me on Twitter. Facebook, it's Real Justin Credible. And what else did I have to plug? My YouTube channel. Yes, my producer is telling me to plug YouTube. YouTube.com/RealJustIncredible. So please hit me up on the social medias. And
I'm looking at your press release also, justincredibleinfo@gmail.com if you want to book Justin for a personal appearance or a wrestling match.
Please do. Yes, absolutely, man.
Awesome. Well, Justin, we appreciate it. This has been a pretty incredible interview.
Well, thank you very much. It was great to do it, man.